For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. US President Donald Trump has arrived in Israel for talks on regional security and peace. He's arrived in Tel Aviv from Saudi Arabia, where he delivered a speech imploring Muslim and Arab leaders to help combat radicalization. The president's first foreign trip since taking office comes with his administration in Washington under increasing pressure over the investigation into alleged links between his campaign and Russia. He'll hold talks with Israeli and Palestinian leaders before heading to Europe. In Tel Aviv, he was welcomed by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who insisted peace in the region is possible.
We've already made peace with Egypt and with Jordan, and Israel's hand is extended to peace, in peace, to all our neighbors, including the Palestinians.
We have before us a rare opportunity to bring security and stability and peace to this region and to its people, defeating terrorism and creating a future of harmony, prosperity, and peace.
Turkey started a mass trial of coup suspects by marching them past a crowd near Ankara. The majority of the 221 suspects are high-ranking officers from the military. They're accused of trying to oust President Erdogan last July. Eurozone finance ministers and IMF leaders are meeting in Brussels with hopes of striking a deal on Greek debt relief, Kevin Ozebek reports.
Greece needs 7.3 billion euros, or just over 8 billion US dollars, unlocked so it can repay maturing loans. So if Eurozone and IMF leaders don't make a deal on Monday, Greece could soon default. The IMF wants a firm commitment from the Eurozone of debt relief for Greece, while Eurozone finance ministers are concerned a firm commitment could make Athens too lax in carrying out more austerity measures. Last week, Greek lawmakers approved more reforms on taxes and pensions to secure the unlocking of more bailout money.
Ukraine's parliament is mulling introducing visas with Russia, a step seen as a punishment for Moscow for its aggression against its neighbor. Moscow is complaining to the World Trade Organization over Kiev's recent sanctions against Russian businesses. Our correspondent Daria Bondarchuk reports from the Russian capital.
The parliament of Ukraine is readying to discuss the introduction of a visa regime with Russia. The move would be an adequate response by the Ukrainian authorities to all the aggression seen in past years, a top member of the People's Front parliamentary faction said, and should follow last week's vote by the European Parliament to initiate a visa-free regime for Ukrainian citizens travelling to the European Union. Russia, meanwhile, sent a request to the WTO to investigate Ukraine's sanctions against Russian foods, goods and services in place since 2014, as well as recent restrictions on Russian banking, transport and internet businesses.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you, Ollie Barrett. Shocking audio levels there at FSN. I'll be complaining after the show. How are you doing? I hope you're well. It's Monday, the 22nd. Of May 2017. It's a muggy, muggy old evening here in Manchester. A bit of thunder in the air. It's been an incredibly warm day. In fact, it's been very warm across the country. I'm talking to you live now on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2 even, TuneIn Radio, my own website, richieallen.co.uk. Do tweet me. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. It is richie@richieallen.co.uk. That's the email address. There's a lot to get through. I have a couple of terrific guests for you. As always, your opinion is really important to me, so let me have it. Tweet at Richie Allen Show right now, and let's get on with this program. Let's do it.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. The Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
Yeah, Trump has been in the Middle East. The terrific journalist and author Stephen Lendman joins the program live from Chicago this hour to tell you what you're not being told about Trump's visit to Saudi Arabia and to Israel today. Stephen Lendman joins the program this hour. And in the second hour, we're going to be tackling an issue, maybe a little bit controversial, but we're going to get stuck into it. Kevin Barrett Dr. Kevin Barrett, academic, author and broadcaster, joins me. Kevin, of course, converted to Islam some years ago. We're going to be looking at the evidence that crimes committed by, can we say Muslim gangs, should we say Arab gangs in the UK, Sweden and France, we're going to analyse whether those crimes are being covered up by the media, the press and the political left. We'll of course be talking about the Asian grooming gangs in Rotherham and Rochdale and getting to the heart of why those crimes were not properly investigated. I did describe it today on social media as dynamite. I hadn't gone all tabloid on you. It is dynamite. I was accused once or twice in the past of refusing to take on this issue because apparently I was very much on the left of the political spectrum and I didn't want to talk about Muslims. I've been talking for years, about how, I hate to say diluted, but how cultures have been attacked by those who control things, the elite, the hidden hand, the cabal, whatever you want to call them. One of the ways they do that, of course, is by driving migration and immigration. And they do that through wars based on lies that destroy countries and kill people. Out of those countries come men and women who, like most men and women, just want to have a good life. Amongst the people leaving those countries are the lunatic jihadis trained by our very intelligence agencies. I've never shied away from talking about it. So we'll talk about that with Kevin. Muslim grooming gangs, Sharia law, what the right is saying about that. Because the broadcast media, the right, the alternative right media, it's all very black and white to them. It's very simple. Islam is the enemy and Islam is a religion of hate and intolerance and it's trying to take over the world. Socialists, on the other hand, say, no, this is all nonsense. It's a complete fabrication. Those countries have been changed irrevocably, have been damaged, have been ruined by Western intervention. I think both the left and the right are ultimately wrong. The truth is somewhere in the middle. And we're going to get into that with Kevin Barrett in the second hour. Now, with that in mind, I extended an invitation today to several of those men and women who are known for promoting websites and YouTube channels that are very much anti-Islam and that very much blame radical Islam for everything, for every ill. And in good faith, I extended an invitation to some of these people. I'll name them throughout the show. And I said, look, come on the programme. And you can come on in an atmosphere of cordiality, of friendship. You get to say what you want to say. And I'll put one or two questions to you. But nobody took me up on the offer. So Kevin Barrett's going to do it. Kevin is a Muslim. And we'll talk about that in the second hour. 9 minutes past the hour. Good stuff. Before I go any further, we'll never get started. Will you start the show, Richie? I had a marvellous email from a gentleman called Aaron in Derby. The content wasn't marvellous. It was about his father. Aaron, I'm not going to read the email without your permission. If you don't mind me reading it, I'll read it on a programme later this week. But it's about the difficulties his father got into through ill health and the heartless system that he encountered right up until the time he died, very much on the style of I, Daniel Blake, and I don't say that flippantly. Aaron, if you want me to read out the email, I will read it out. Thank you, mate, for sending it to me. It touched me today when I read it and made me a bit emotional. And if I read it now, I'd get emotional. So we'll just move on. Aaron, thank you so much. It's Aaron with an A-R-O-N, not two A's, in Derby. Now, Theresa May has been talking to the media today and said proposed changes to social care funding in England will now include an absolute limit on the money people will have to pay. The Prime Minister denied that she's done a U-turn, saying she was responding to shameful claims that people would be forced to sell their family home. Plans to make people receiving care at home liable for the full costs, if they are worth at least £100,000, have caused uproar since they were released and announced on Thursday. So on Thursday, the Tory party said, if you're getting care at home, provided by the state, if they're sending people to care for you at home, you will pay the full cost of that if you are worth over £100,000. Needless to say, men and women of seniority, of a senior age, and people approaching senior age shat the bed, quite understandably, when they heard this, because it meant ultimately selling off your home to pay for your care and not leaving your home for children. So the Tories have done a U-turn on it and said they'll now include an absolute limit. We'll now put a limit on the money people will have to pay even, but they won't say what it is. All right. They won't say what it is. Here is Theresa May being quizzed on this by the media today, by the press. To say she's a little bit tetchy is a bit of an understatement. Listen.
I don't recall a U-turn on a manifesto in any election campaign. Now we've had national insurance and this. As Margaret Thatcher might have said, U-turn, or didn't say, U-turn if you want to, the lady is for turning. Doesn't this show that you are really weak and wobbly, not strong and stable? Can you give us an idea of what the cap will be? 100,000? 200,000? Half a million? Don't the people of this country have a right to know what the cap will be?
Oh, they do.
We have not changed the principles of the policy that we set out in our manifesto.
She's
Those policies remain exactly the same.
She's lying.
There will be aspects of how this operates that we will consult on through the Green Paper. We were honest that we were going to have a Green Paper.
Liar.
And that we would be consulting people on how the system operates. What we have done, which other parties have singularly failed to do, is to recognise the challenge that we face, to respect the needs and concerns of the British people, and to provide a long-term plan for sustainable social care, which means that elderly people in this country won't have to worry about how their social care will be paid for.
But they shouldn't have to worry, you demented bat, because if they are paying social insurance, national insurance and taxes for 40 or 50 years, they shouldn't have to give it a second thought. Not a second thought. Between paying national insurance and income tax and tax when you go to a restaurant and tax when you buy cigarettes and tax when you buy a drink and tax when you buy chewing gum, crisps and God knows what else, condoms, lubrication gel, everything that they've paid taxes on all their lives, they shouldn't have to give it a second thought. Right? Isn't that fair? Why would they have to worry about it? Or were they sold a pack of lies? Of course they were. Work hard. Pay your share. Everything will be okay when you get old. No, it won't be. What a liar. So they won't say what this limit is going to be now. More on that maybe throughout the week. The leader of the Lib Dems, Tim Farron, and the Labour Party leader, Jeremy Corbyn, they were quick to come out and, I suppose, exploit some political capital. You'll hear Farron first, then Corbyn.
Well, nothing has changed. The Tory manifesto, which was always one of cruelty, is now one of chaos. Theresa May stood up and spoke at length and said nothing. The dementia tax is clearly still planned. No details whatsoever. 9 out of 10 homes in this country potentially to be cashed in by the Conservatives to pay for care for people, not just with dementia, but other conditions as well, potentially multiple sclerosis. This is what happens when you have a government that thinks it's going to win with an enormous majority. Governments that have landslide majorities make bad decisions, big mistakes, and take people for granted. Margaret Thatcher with the poll tax, Theresa May with the dementia tax. Today, nothing has changed, except we now know the Tory manifesto is not just cruel, it is chaotic.
They haven't said what the cap is. They haven't explained to the millions of people who are desperately worried at the moment about what kind of care they're going to get in the future, desperately worried for children as well about how their parents are going to be looked after. This is a government in chaos and confusion.
I mean, your general reaction to the fact that that cap wasn't in the Conservative manifesto?
Well, it should be there because people need to have some certainty in their lives. They need to know how their social care is going to be paid for. We will put $2 billion a year in straight away to plug the immediate gap. And then we'll call everyone together to agree on a strategy, the strategy based on the need to care for everybody.
Yeah, now I said when this election was announced that despite the overwhelming lead the Conservative Party had and the fact it looked very much like they were going to secure a pretty easy victory, I did say at the time, remember what happened last November. Okay? And the election result in the United States. What's going on here? I've been thinking about this over the weekend. I've been thinking about it for the last couple of weeks, really. The Conservative Party policies, the policies on social care we've just been hearing about, the winter fuel allowance, the reverse on fox hunting, the plans to basically regulate and take control of and privatise the internet. All of these terrible, when I say terrible policies, they're terrible naturally, but totally destructive for any party fighting a general election. They don't make mistakes, these people. The people behind those who campaign, the people behind the politicians. So is there a case to be made that this election, somebody is trying to throw this election to the Labour Party? And if not to the Labour Party, but possibly to a Labour Liberal Democrat coalition. I wonder. The Trump effect, we could call it. I mentioned today on social media, a couple of million voters under 25 have registered in the last couple of weeks alone, the last week. The majority of them will be voting for Labour. Labour came out today and said that their plans to scrap tuition fees, which result in students leaving university, often with a bill to pay of over £40,000. That plan will begin this autumn, effectively. So that anybody starting university this coming autumn, any first-year student, won't be liable to have to borrow to pay for their education. Is somebody trying to throw the election, or some entity trying to throw it to Labour and the Lib Dems? And are they trying to do that because of the European Union? Because it will be very difficult now for those who really control things to bring about a narrative, to sell us a narrative where Theresa May does an about turn on the exit of the UK from the European Union. Now, Corbyn campaigned for the UK to remain in the Union, despite the fact that all his life he's been a huge critic of the European Union and the damage that it does to employment, to so many different things. So what is going on? Are we seeing a similar... Of course, Trump and Corbyn are two completely different personalities. I'm not making that comparison. But aren't we seeing the same thing here? An overwhelmingly favourite front runner. We had Hillary, now we have Theresa May. A guy who's not getting much from the media. In fact, most of the media coverage of Corbyn generally tends to be pretty negative. See the Sophie Ridge interview yesterday about the IRA. And I was speaking to David about this morning. A bizarre thing that. You know, that's an irrelevant issue. Most people in the country, I think, couldn't care less at this stage, 20 years after the Good Friday Agreement. You know, 15 years, maybe a little bit less after devolution. Maybe 15 years, my memory is gone. The IRA thing is no biggie, but what it serves to do is paint Corbyn as some sort of underdog, as some sort of victim. And I just wonder, are we seeing, with the narrowing of the lead of the Conservative Party, are we seeing the ground being laid for a Labour Lib Dem, if not a Labour government, I doubt that, but a Labour Lib Dem, maybe even SNP coalition, I wonder. Now, of course, that could be nonsense. And the Conservatives might gain a majority, slightly more than the one they gained in 2015, maybe a little bit more. Or maybe they'll have a minority government. I don't know. I'm not making a prediction. Because what happened with Trump has shown that it's impossible to see how they're going to spin it. But what we do know is those who really control what we see, what we consume as politics, the European Union and the UK remaining in it is vital to them and for their future plans. Vital. So could we possibly see a massive shock on the 8th of June? I don't know. It's possible. I probably still lean towards the Conservatives getting in, probably. But I wouldn't be surprised, because some of what we're seeing now, the conduct of May today, the discomfort of May, the slight turn on her by the media, these bizarre policies that nobody could hand to a prime minister or to a party chairman and say, look, these are policies that are going to win us the election. Dreadful, dreadful policies. Older people more likely to vote for Conservative. Why go after older people unless there's something going on? That's all I'm going to say on that. No doubt we'll explore this in more detail in programmes this week and ongoing. It is 21 and a half minutes past the hour for Monday, the 22nd of May 2016. This is your Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, and TuneIn Radio. Do stay tuned. Coming up in a minute, Stephen Lenman from Chicago. Don't miss him.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbayerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines.
Richie Allen.
Welcome back to the program. It's Monday show. Start of a brand new week. Good to be with you. My name is Richie Allen. It's exactly 3 minutes, 23 even past the hour. Stephen Lenman is in Chicago. We're going to be talking Donald Trump, Saudi Arabia, Israel, the Arab NATO and more. This is Def Leppard and Armageddon, and welcome to the show.
Yeah.
Freudian slips that Armageddon it from Def Leppard on the Richie Allen Show. 25 minutes past the hour. Muggy, muggy evening in Manchester, in South Manchester. God, it's warm in the studio, but it's great to be with you. Thank you for joining me, as always. Our next guest is a special man, a wonderful journalist, author, and a broadcaster, it must be said. Check out his blog, sjlendman.blogspot.com. That's sjlendman.blogspot.com. I'll tweet where you can find out more about him as well. His book, How Wall Street Fleeces America, Privatized Banking, Government Collusion and Class War, is one of those books you must have in your collection. It really is outstanding. He's been a busy man today. He's doing a lot of interviews on the back of his president, US President Donald Trump's visit to the Middle East. He's been in Saudi Arabia, as we know. He's been in Israel today. For comment on that and the sort of analysis you won't get anywhere else, let's welcome back to the show, live from Chicago, our great friend Stephen Lendman. Stephen, welcome back.
Oh, Richie, thank you so much. It's great to be back on with you.
You're a gent. You've been busy today. It's a busy old day on account of what's going on. Stephen, what's going on today? It's interesting, as you and I are talking now, the media, as the media does and as the media is focusing on a non-story about Trump and his wife Melania rejecting his hand and pushing him away. Of course, there's a lot more interesting things going on in Israel and the real reasons for Trump's visit there than any spat he might have had with his wife. It's quite bizarre how it's being covered. How are you reading what you've seen today?
Well, since he spent 2 days in Saudi Arabia, and of course the real story of that is, on the one hand, he went to get away from the whirlwind of troubles that have been haunting him at home, literally a coup d'etat, a slow motion coup d'etat attempt to oust him from office. So he goes and pays a trip to Saudi Arabia, gets together with 55 Muslim countries, nearly all of them, maybe all of them, despotic ones, and the two that should have been invited, most of all, the only two countries in the region that support peace and stability, and that's Iran and Syria. Well, they were not invited, obviously. They were kept away. But the ones supporting terrorism and endless wars were invited to get together with Trump, and he gave a speech that was an act of mass deception, claiming he came to Riyadh, allying with Saudi Arabia and the other Muslim states, seeking peace, intending to combat terrorism, where America's agenda and the agenda of his host for certain, and at least most of the countries, certainly the rogue Middle East ones, the Gulf states, Jordan, very definitely Egypt as well, very definitely state sponsors of terrorism. They certainly are not combating it.
Certainly not, no. And despotic is obviously the right way to describe these states, these countries. And I want to talk more about that in a minute and what he said about Iran. But what we're seeing happening domestically for Trump, Stephen, this, as you described it, this, you know, attempted coup d'etat, the claims, the false claims that the Russians rigged the election somehow and that Trump's campaign team or even Trump himself were involved. What I can't understand genuinely, and there's no better man than you to explain it, who is trying to get rid of him? Because he is the darling of the neocons and the Zionists. They love Trump. So who exactly, what other power group is trying to get rid of Trump? And who are these people?
Oh, what a great question. Absolute great question. I don't have a definitive answer for you. I think what's going on is something like this. The only way Trump could have been elected president is because enough support existed for him. Otherwise, it would have gone to Hillary. Hillary led in the polls virtually all the way through. I think there were a couple of moments when they were pretty close to neck and neck, but Hillary definitely had a lead. The media, with the rare exceptions, overwhelmingly supported her. I refer to the New York Times as her press agent, but you could say the same thing about most of the rest of them, whether it was print media or electronic media. It really was outrageous. And just Trump bashing every single day. If there was nothing to bash him about, then stuff was invented to bash him.
Yeah.
With all of that stuff going on, you would have thought that Hillary would be a shoo-in. I thought she was a shoo-in.
Me too.
It didn't happen. Trump became president. I think what's going on in America, Richie, is the deep state, the real power people in America that control everything. It's not the president. It's the people behind the scenes that most people never heard of. I think America's deep state was divided. Hillary had her supporters. Trump had his supporters. And the way it worked out, Trump won and she lost. I called it an Alfred Hitchcock ending, one that you would never predict, that most people would never predict. I didn't, and most other people didn't predict either. But the people who dislike Trump, I think, and of course Hillary is one of them, Obama is another one, and the people supporting them, I think they're continuing to go after Trump. I guess there could be a lot of reasons. One reason is a lot of the stuff that he said while campaigning, anti-NATO stuff, wanting better relations with Russia, building the wall on the Mexican border. I don't think anybody cares about that except the money spent. Maybe better to spend it on weapons and waging wars than keeping immigrants from Mexico from coming into America, which America business loves because it's virtual slave labor for U.S. businesses. So why keep them out? Let them come in. Let them pour in. They love these people. I think Trump's unpredictability is another big factor. Many times he says one thing, then he says another thing, and then he says a third thing. So what does he really believe in? Where does he stand? A lot of people aren't sure. I'm not sure except for one thing. He delegated war making to hawkish generals. He delegated economic and financial policy to Goldman Sachs. He supports police state laws. The ones on the books are more than he wants to put on. I wrote an article today about his draconian budget that will come out tomorrow. It's just a slash and burn budget for social benefits for ordinary Americans, especially the most vulnerable, America's poor. He wants to cut $800 billion over the next decade out of Medicare. He wants to slash food stamps, without which millions of Americans, 44 million now, would be food insecure and have to rely on charity for food. Otherwise, they won't eat. He wants to cut a reported, if I remember the number, I think it was $178 billion out of this program over the next decade. They ought to add $178 billion to it, not cut it out. What he really is doing, he's increasing the wealth disparity in America. He's doing more for business, doing more for high net worth households. His tax cut proposal, which never will go through the way he proposed it, but basically it's a handout to business and America's rich, and giving it most crumbs to most everybody else. Maybe a great many. You can't give people who don't pay taxes a tax cut, Richie.
No, you can't.
Poor people in America don't pay taxes because they don't make enough. So how do you give them a tax cut? So he's doing nothing for them. Millions of them. His health care program is an absolute disaster. I've written a number of articles on it. Obamacare is a disaster. And he wants to take Obamacare and make it worse. So you go right down the line. Everything for the privileged in America, nothing for everybody else, or most everybody else, or at most, crumbs. And still, he's beaten up on. It's really astonishing. I think it's because of his unpredictability and because the deep state is divided, Richie. I think that's what it comes down to.
That's a brilliant comment. Thanks for pointing out the forthcoming budget. When he announced what he would do when he announced his fiscal plans, and we looked at what he said, and then we looked at what the Republicans themselves were saying, Paul Ryan, I looked at it and I have a little bit of experience with analysing these documents, and like you just described there, you described it far better than me. I saw pretty quickly that was exactly what was going to happen. Slash and burn was a wonderful way that you described it there. Let me just, before we go back to Saudi Arabia and Israel, on the deep state division, this is very, very interesting. I think you might very well be onto something there. I look at the deep state and I see the banking families, the banking cartels, the Zionist banking cartels as basically running things. And people like Kissinger and all these people we thought had gone away a long time ago, a lot of these people are still involved behind the scenes. You think, Stephen, and you might very well be right, that amongst that cabal, that hidden hand, that tiny clique that really runs things, in those corridors of power, you think before the election, there was disagreement about who should take America into the next phase of the agenda. You really do believe that?
Oh, yeah, I think there really was. I mean, I think there, if I remember the number, I think there were 17 Republican aspirants vying to become the next president. I call them a rogues gallery, something the equivalent of a police lineup, just a bunch of rogues, an absolute terrible bunch. And I referred to Trump as maybe the best of the worst, vying with Hillary and even Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders is an absolute fraud, a longtime con man. He's voting, his congressional voting record is 98% of the time with Democrats. And we know what they support: endless wars of aggression, everything for Israel, Wall Street. Look what Obama did, never talked about very much. He gave tax cuts to the rich. He did an awful lot for Wall Street. He cut Medicare. So all the good things that the media say about Obama, he had a terrible record. He just looted the country for America's rich. But Trump wants to even go further than Obama ever did, if he ever gets away with this. The one thing that may save people in America, Richie, is there are some Republicans that are very worried that if they go along with everything he wants them to do, they won't be reelected. House members come up for re-election every 2 years, Senate members every 6 years, one-third of the Senate every 2 years. So the Senate is coming up in the next midterm elections in 2018, November 2018. They're kind of scared. If they go the wrong way and the constituents are angry at them, well, there'll be somebody else that will take their place in Congress. So they may not go along with a lot of what Trump wants to do.
Hey, Stephen, I have a question on that. Sorry to interrupt you, Stephen. I have the deepest respect for you. I don't want to interrupt you, but you've got me thinking there. I wonder, because you and I mean, you've been doing this a lot longer than I have, with great distinction. I'm not kissing your ass. I'm not. You're a magnificent broadcaster. You've been doing this for years. I wonder, was Mike Pence the choice, Stephen? Pence could never have gotten elected because he had no charisma. He had nothing about him. He had no great base with which to launch a campaign and, you know, all that goes with that. I wonder, did they want Pence? And is Trump going to be thrown under the bus now, impeached? And are we going to see a Nixon-type thing and Pence will take over? I wonder.
Well, I've written about that. I wrote an article asking...
I'm going to share it as we're speaking. Go ahead.
Is Pence fundraising to become a president in waiting?
Yeah.
And I really wonder whether he's fundraising. He's fundraising. I mean, vice presidents have these fundraising packs, but they usually don't put anything together this early in their tenure. And Pence began doing it almost straight away in office. So I'm wondering if he's readying himself to replace Trump. I think Trump made a very serious mistake appointing him as vice president, because I think he's worse than Trump. Extreme hardliner, Islamophobic, homophobic, Russophobic, everything for America's rich, absolutely against anything for ordinary Americans. Just about as far to the right as anybody can imagine in America. And that's the kind of guy he is. I think he's very sinister as well. Certainly pro-war and pro-Wall Street and the rest of it.
So is it possible, Stephen, is it possible that the... I mean, for me, the book stops with the human face of this is the House of Rothschild, the Rockefeller, Warburg, Oppenheimer banking cartels. These people control the money supply. Again, nobody's done more writing about the banking cartels than you over the years. I wonder, along the way, did they decide, we like this guy Pence, particularly for the agenda that they want to pursue in the Middle East, and the way to get Pence in is to attach him to Donald. We can sell Donald to people because he's mad and he's a reality TV star and he's funny and he's hilarious and he's weird. And people will go for that because Hillary is so toxic. Really, we want Pence in. And then we can connect Trump to Russia, get rid of him, and Pence is right there. Is that... it might not be a probability. Is it a possibility Got to be.
Oh,
right.
I think it's a very strong possibility. I think you know we'll know more in hindsight.
Yeah.
But I think you may have nailed it.
No,
right
you
on
nailed
the,
it.
The Richie.
You've been writing about this. This is all your work. You've been writing about this for quite a while about the positioning of Pence. I'm not going to take credit for it. It's been occurring to me. But it has been occurring to me because I read sjlendman.blogspot.com. I read what you write because you're great. And it's been on my mind. They're so nefarious and malevolent and, they're often two, three steps ahead of even the most seasoned independent media heads. That why wouldn't they do that? You know, attach Trump with Pence because Pence was the man they wanted all along. I just want to do a quick recap. The amazing Stephen Lendman is on the program. Go to sjlendman.blogspot.com. This man has got integrity, moxie, the whole lot. I'm telling you, go and read him. Bookmark his website. Completely independent. And for anybody listening to this who might not have heard everything, Stephen Lendman has been challenging the two-party state and the whole electoral paradigm, the idea that we can vote our way out of this. He's been challenging this for years and years and years and years. So he goes to Saudi Arabia, sells them hundreds of millions of dollars worth of weapons. You described them as aptly as they could possibly be described. Despotic regime. You talked about Jordan, about Egypt, Israel, Syria and Iran weren't invited. He's banging the Iran drum again, isn't he? You know what, Stephen? I believe you're right. I think deep down Trump meant everything he said when he was a businessman, when he was just a TV personality. He meant everything when he said, we shouldn't have anything to do with invading these countries. This is all wrong. I really do believe he meant that. So he's saying this stuff about Iran probably through gritted teeth, right? Probably.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think you may be very right. You know, maybe not everything that he said campaigning, but I think he leaned more in the direction of his campaign pledges than away from them. But when a man or a woman, one day it'll be a woman, gets into the Oval Office, I think the first thing that happens is some people sit down with him or her one day and they explain the way things are, the facts of life. Now, this is what you have to do. And I think the memory of Jack Kennedy, I think, is very well in the minds of everybody who enters the job as America's president. Anybody going against the system will be removed from office one way or another. And Kennedy was the only who happened to be my commencement speaker when he was a senator in 1956. Kennedy really went against the grain. He didn't begin that way, but he did in office, transforming himself from a warrior to a peacemaker and a whole lot of other things, positive things that he did, including wanting to recognize Palestinians, wanting rapprochement with Russia, wanting nuclear disarmament. I mean, these things are anathema to America's deep state. So they got rid, and I think he was reasonably popular. I think he would have been reelected had he lived and run in 1964 for a reelection. So so how are you going to impeach a guy like that? The way to get him out of office was what happened. Of course, they got Nixon out of office because he was controversial. And they got him out for the wrong reasons, not the right reasons. They're going after Trump the same way, attacking him not for the right reasons, you know, a warrior, all these wars going on and the rest of it, for the wrong reasons. And I think having Pence in the wings, I think the idea is, yeah, they'll get rid of Trump and they'll put Pence in. But we don't know. Maybe Trump will fool them. I think his diversionary tactic going to Saudi Arabia, as hideous as that was, and the terrible weapons deal and all the deception about wanting to fight terrorism and the rest of it, the truth is exactly opposite of what he said. I think that was a deception that goes down well with the corporate media, and it's hard to bash him for that. So he's a little bit getting glowing reports, if not glowing reports, at least not demonizing reports right now. Well, he'll come home next weekend, and things will settle back to the usual groove they've been in, and they'll be bashing him again. Over the weekend, his son-in-law was named a person of interest. You heard about that.
Yeah,
Jared Kushner, in connection with the Russia probe. I wrote an article about it today. I mean, there's no evidence that anybody did anything wrong. There's certainly not that Russia hacked the election or there's any wrongdoing between Team Trump and Russia. So I don't think they're going to find anything. I just can't imagine they're going to find anything. They've been investigating this stuff since around the middle of last year, and they found nothing, Richie. No. So what on earth are they going to find now? They've got this guy Mueller.
The former director,
Robert
yeah.
Mueller.
Yeah.
Chief counsel coming in to investigate, picking up the baton to carry it forward. But what on earth is he going to find when nobody's been able to find anything so far? The idea is to keep the anti-Trump pot boiling, and they can keep it boiling as long as they want until they accomplish what they want to accomplish. And I'm guessing it's they want to get him out of office. Whether Trump will be able to foil them or not, I don't know. So, I mean, if you ask me, is he going to be dumped or not? I honestly don't know, Richie. I think it leans toward a yes, but who knows? Maybe he'll fool them and manage to stay in office. Maybe he'll do enough that the deep state likes overall that they'll keep him instead of dumping him. But we'll have to wait and see.
We'll have to wait and see. And finally, on that, and thanks for coming back on today on a day when you have a lot of other media appearances. Finally on that, Iran is obviously the next target for the cabal, for the deep state, isn't it? There's no doubt about that. The rhetoric, the anti-Iranian rhetoric, the nonsense about the Iranians' desire for nuclear weapons, which they don't want them. I mean, and if they did, I wouldn't blame them, considering Israel has a stockpile, Pakistan, India, you wouldn't blame them. But you have to look at what General Wesley Clark said all those years ago. Again, you've written extensively about that. The Iran is the next big target for this Zionist neocon lunacy, right?
Oh, absolutely. There have been war plans drawn up against Iran for many, many years, updated over time, and probably Trump's team is updating them again. There's no question that the regime change is planned for Iran. Nobody knows it better than Iran. But the other two countries' regime change is planned for are Russia and China. And, of course, Venezuela, all the turmoil going on there. This is a coup d'etat in process. I expect something maybe to explode at one point or another. They'll make another attempt to oust the Maduro government and the Bolivarian fairness. All sovereign independent countries are on America's hit list for regime change to put pro-Western puppets in their place. And the main ones are Russia, China, and Iran. The next war may be against Iran. The Syria war proved very, very tough for America to wage. Iran will be a lot tougher. They're a much bigger country, stronger military. They know what's coming. They've been preparing for years. They never had a nuclear program, weapons program. They don't want one. Everybody knows that. Every year, an annual U.S. intelligence report says Iran has no nuclear weapons program. There's no evidence indicating they have one. There's no evidence indicating they want one. And yet the big lie continues, using that as a pretext, plus calling Iran the leading sponsor of terrorism, which is absolutely false. And they'll use these reasons to do something against Iran. They tried a color revolution a few years ago that failed, a green revolution. It failed. So maybe the next strategy is war. But the plan was, Richie, defeat Syria, isolate Iran, and then go after Iran.
Stephen, it's always brilliant having you on the programme. Folks, go to sjlendman.blogspot.com. Do it now. Bookmark Stephen's website. Great to have you on, Stephen. Thanks for the analysis, mate, and I look forward to speaking to you again real soon.
Oh, thank you, Richie.
It's an honour. Thank you, Stephen Lendman, the great Stephen Lendman, live from his home in Chicago. You heard him on Monday's Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, and TuneIn Radio. Book Stephen's website, read his articles. I'm going to tweet the relevant articles from the last couple of days that Stephen was talking about there, but bookmark the website, as I said. It's 11 minutes to the top of the hour. I'm going to take some more music when we come back, some of your tweets. Don't forget, going to be talking Islamic extremism with Kevin Barrett in the second hour of the programme. And we're going to be coming at this from a different angle. The extreme right, the alternative right, as they call themselves, want or would have you believe that Islam as a religion is a cover for world domination, that the Islamic ideology as spread through the religious doctrine is about taking over the world and about driving out the unbelievers and about world domination. Those on the left will tell you that Muslims are victims, that Islam has replaced communism as the stick to beat and to keep ordinary men and women like you and I in line with. It's the fear tool of the 21st century. Is the truth somewhere in the middle? I'm going to talk to Kevin Barrett. Kevin's a great guy, great friend of ours in this programme. He converted to Islam some years ago. And we're going to talk about grooming gangs and sex trafficking gangs in the Asian communities in this country. We're going to talk about criminal behaviour by what the media are crassly calling Arab gangs in Sweden and in France. Has criminal behaviour by ethnic minorities, groups of ethnic minorities, has it been ignored, overlooked, buried by the authorities for their multicultural agenda? Has it? Well, we'll have a chat with Kevin Barrett about that in the second hour. My opinion on this is well known, so I'm not going to spend too much time on it. I want to get Kevin's opinion, but I want to get your opinion. I want you to tweet me and email me with what you think about these stories. These stories in the press today about no-go areas in Paris, about how the police in France are reluctant to take on groups from Islamic backgrounds, from Muslim backgrounds, because of the repercussions, because of the race card, all of this sort of stuff. I want your opinion at Richie Allen Show, richie@richieallen.co.uk. Here's Eric Clapton. slow hand, Eric Clapton. It's in the way that you use it on your Richie Allen Show, Europe's most listened to independent radio news show, by a country mile, 5 minutes to the top of the hour. Broadcasting live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, TuneIn Radio, and richieallen.co.uk. So the autumn schedule for the programme, we've brought it forward, but there is an autumn schedule for the programme. Sunday View, 11 a.m. Sundays, live Richie Allen Radio, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday evening at 7 p.m. UK time. Thursday night, 9 p.m. the TV show, and Friday, 1 p.m. All live, every single show live, by the way. That's the forthcoming autumn schedule, but we're on that schedule already. There will be a slight change to it this week, don't panic. But Wednesday's programme will be a two-hour radio show with guests, but it will be recorded. So Wednesday's programme will be on at 7 p.m. as usual. That's 7 p.m. Wednesday as usual. It will be 2 hours, and it will be packed full of information, but it will be recorded Wednesday. I'm going to record it in the early afternoon. Why, you ask? Because the football team I've supported since I was a wee lad is in a European Cup final on Wednesday evening, and I'm going to watch it. But I'm not taking any time off. The programme will be recorded, will be interesting, and will be full of information and great guests, but it won't be live, so it won't be interactive. But it will be brand new, and it will be on at 7 p.m., by the way, on Wednesday, okay? Okay, busy old day Wednesday, because I'm booked in with Maria Heller on her programme on Wednesday. I'm looking forward to that. I don't do anything with anybody else, but I'm delighted to be doing something with Maria on her terrific show on Wednesday. Busy old day Wednesday. So I'll say that again, just in case you didn't hear it, and I might forget to mention it tomorrow evening, because I'm pretty busy on the show tomorrow evening. But the Wednesday edition of this programme will be on at 7 p.m. as normal. It won't be live, it will be recorded. Don't think you'll begrudge me that at 3 minutes to the top of the hour. Had an email from a listener the other day, and I want to address it. It's from Brian. In fact, it isn't. It's from Ben. And Ben, thanks very much for the email. And I've had one or two of these emails offering me help with production, and people offering their services. Richie, will help you out with production. So I'm going to address it. Over the 3 years, a couple of people have periodically helped out with production, and with the best will and the best intention in the world on both sides, it didn't work out. And the upshot of that, to put it down, to jump right to the brass tacks, it is very, very, very difficult to come in and produce a programme like this. If I was to have a producer in the future, the person would have to be vastly experienced in producing live radio, would have to have a contact book as long as their arm. They would have to know who the go-to people are on any issue. They'd have to have a real broad knowledge of the subjects that are discussed on this programme. And finding somebody like that, again, people have helped out in the past with the best of intentions, but just haven't... It hasn't worked out, okay? So I'm not in the market for a producer. I've realised that the best way for me to do this is for me to do it, lock, stock and barrel. For me to source the guests, the material, the information, and to book the guests and carry on doing it. It means doing 16-hour days. It meant it anyway, even when I did have a bit of help. And again, when I've had help in the past, I've had help from very well-meaning and decent people. But it hasn't worked out. It's not good enough for what I need. So I'm going to have to do it ongoing. I'm not James Brown. I don't collapse at the end of every programme. I'm not helped off into the wings of the stage by anybody. But look, people who have experience, who understand the medium, are like gold dust. And those people warrant paying, and paying well. And it's not going to happen. So thank you so much to everybody, including Ben, who've come forward and said, Richie, we'll give you a hand. But No. Right. At the risk of offending people, no, it's not going to work out. I'm going to take a quick break. When I come back, we're going to have none other than Kevin Barrett on the programme. You don't want to miss Kevin. This is very, very serious. The portrayal of Islam on the left and on the right. What's the truth? Is it somewhere in the middle? Kevin Barrett's the man. Back in a minute with him.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbayerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Welcome back. Back to the programme. I really want you to participate in the next 45 minutes. I want your comments. I know I ask for them and sometimes I don't get to read them all out because we get snowed under. But I'm going to read your comments out. I want your comments on Islam in the United Kingdom and in Europe. Do you have sympathy with the British, with the English, not the English Defence League, but many of these groups in the UK, the alleged reformed Tommy Robinson and others, do you sympathise with their claims that we have a serious problem with radical Islam in the UK? Do we? Do you believe that? Do you believe that it is being undermined, it is being underplayed and in fact ignored by the authorities in this country? Do you believe those who in Sweden and in France say the same thing? Are you with those on the left who say, no, nothing could be further from the truth? What we're seeing is a hyper fear-mongering, the use of Islam, the way that communism was used to beat us up, to scare us and to terrify us into acquiescence. That's what I want to talk about. And there's no better man than our next guest to talk about that. He's a great friend of this programme's. He's an author, a journalist, an academic who himself converted to Islam some years ago. His website is terrific. Check out truthjihad.com. That's truthjihad.com. Links there to his website. His books, Truth Jihad, We Are Not, Charlie Hebdo, and much more besides. He's live from Madison, Wisconsin to talk about this today. We're going to do what, and this is not arrogant, we're going to do what the right and the left do not do. We're going to treat it seriously. And we're going to see, can we separate the fact from the fiction about the threat from radical Islam within European countries. Always a pleasure to have the great Kevin Barrett on our programme. Kevin, welcome back.
It's great to be back with you, Richie.
It's great to do these subjects with you, Kevin. And I'm going to point out again that today a number of people, and if Kevin will just bear with me for a minute, and then I'm going to shut up and get out of his way, because my audience are pretty familiar with my feelings on these subjects. But we have invited a number of people on the programme today, Maryam Namazi among them, the author, Peter McLaughlin, the author of a book about radical Islam, was invited on the programme today. Peter expressed interest in doing it. I think he was a bit dubious about my background. But Peter said he was in transit, couldn't do it. I wanted to give some of these people the platform to express their views, but it didn't work out. A number of them just didn't want to come on. Simple as that. So, Kevin, in the last few days, the BBC have been running a drama about the grooming of young women in Rochdale and how that was ignored by... and I spoke last week briefly. She won't come on the programme with a social worker called Sarah Rowbotham, who worked with many of the women whom were attacked and groomed. Sarah won't come on the show. She's a bit fed up of it, I think. She's done a lot of media about it. And this BBC drama is ultimately about her. So the alt-right say that the fact that the police and the media took a dim view of reporting on and taking these claims seriously about grooming gangs is evidence of a massive cover-up and a state refusal to acknowledge that there is a problem with some radicals who take the teachings of Islam to the extreme. Those people are operating in these countries and it's being covered up. Now, I know you've looked at this very closely, Kev. Where do you see this? What do you think of what I've just been talking about there?
Well, that discourse linking it to religion is completely absurd. That's as if we said that the British media's inability to come to grips with what Jimmy Savile was doing, not just Jimmy Savile, but the entire ruling class of the UK, the judges, the politicians, the military people, the intelligence people, the wealthy business people, the people who run the UK, Richie, were largely penetrated and involved by the same pedophile ring that we learned about through the Jimmy Savile case. And let's blame that on Christianity. Let's say that radical Christians have penetrated the United Kingdom and are grooming children for these pedophile gangs. What does that have to do with Christianity? Absolutely nothing whatsoever. Now, as you know, Richie, here in the United States, the stereotype, and there's some truth to this, is that your average pimp is likely to be African American. So let's blame it on African Americans. And let's blame it on Christians because they're mostly from Christian backgrounds. So it's all the fault of Christianity and it's the fault of African American racial characteristics that we have pimps running gangs of sex slaves here in the United States. Right? Wrong. That's insane, sickening racism. And the people you're talking about are the most disgusting, sickening racists that ever defaced this fair planet.
There's very little I can argue with there. It must be said. You and I have known each other for years. And I said I wasn't going to say too much because my audience understand that I am, you know, these are pretty much this is pretty much the opinion I have on it. But can we separate two issues? You're absolutely right. There are paedophile networks operating in this country through the establishment. We know this. Speaking of cover-ups, so you have the alt-right on the one hand, the in America, it's the Paul Joseph Watsons. Here, it's Tommy Robinson and others who conveniently ignore the fact that paedophile rings are operating at the highest levels of government and the state. There's no doubt about that. But I want to separate the issues because I said to you today when we spoke, a number of people who talk about these issues, I don't believe are racist. And I could be wrong because I don't know them personally. But I watched them. I watched the discourse on social media. And these are people who have grown up in communities, Kevin. And they've seen their communities change drastically over the years. And they've seen their neighbourhoods where people look like them, behave like them, aspire to, whether it's the same religion, whether it's the same social life as them, and they've seen their communities change drastically. Now, I know these are two separate issues, but they do come together, I think, especially when we're talking about this. And those people, Kevin, they see, and what we understand about Rotherham and Rochdale, we do know for a fact, I think I can say for a fact, that the authorities were very reluctant to, in many cases it's been proven, to go after. And we can talk later on about how the authorities and Scotland Yard stopped investigating leads that led to very, very important, prominent people and politicians. I can do that all day. I have no problem with that. But these people know in these communities that have changed drastically. And all of a sudden, you know, there's a big Asian population in the community, Afro-Caribbean population in the community. And these people, they say, well, we know that the police and that the media stopped investigating this and stopped reporting on it. Why, they ask? Why did they do that? Now, I put it to you, they did that because mass immigration, the destruction of countries in the region that we talk about so often over the years, you and I, one of the reasons One of the intended consequences of that was for mass migration, to pit people against one another, to put people against one another and not against the hidden hand that controls all these events. So those people in those communities who are horrified by what they've seen in their communities might, on the surface of it, look like, and you know, it might make it easy for them to be called racist, but deep down they're not. They're very, very concerned about what's happened to their areas. Do you have sympathy with that? Do you understand that, Kevin?
Well, sure. That's the same reason a lot of people voted for Trump here in the United States. A lot of white working class people feel like they were born into a very different country. I know I do. I feel that way myself. I'm white and not that far from my forebears' working class origins. And the country I grew up in the 1960s, it was into the 70s. It really changed radically. And I think it changed the most sort of when I was a teenager in the 70s. Manners and morals have grotesquely declined. And along with these various forms of civilizational decline, we've seen the demographic decline of what some people call the white race, which I don't even believe exists, but it's a kind of a term that covers these, you know, people from sort of the northwest fringes of the Eurasian continent. Eurasia is one continent. There's no such thing as Europe. There's no such thing as Asia. It's obviously one continent, but this is the way people think. Anyway, so here in the United States, a lot of folks have this sense that the decline of the white people and the incoming of all these hordes from Mexico and the increase in the percentage of the population of African Americans and all this sort of thing, along with a lot of other stuff that I don't like either, such as the decline in manners and morals, all of this has made this a very different country. And I do sympathize with that to some extent. And I can imagine how some people in Britain would feel the same way. But it's important not to allow kind of a just sense of being worried about this situation we're in, this declining civilization. It's declining in so many ways, and we need to be clear about what's really going on, what are the real causes of it, and we need to stay away from falling into this kind of scapegoating that, as you said, just plays into the divide and conquer agenda of the people who are behind a lot of the problems that we're talking about. And scapegoating Muslims is the simplest thing to do these days, because the entire population of the West and large part of the world has been brainwashed at a level below the surface of consciousness by the 9/11 inside job mind control operation designed to implant Islamophobia deep into the subconscious minds of the population. And so people instantly, as soon as they see these incredibly un-Islamic criminals doing these incredibly un-Islamic things, they blame Islam, not because Islam has anything to do with this, but because their brains have been injected with this horrible toxin by the 9/11 operation and the subsequent follow-up false flags, including 7/7 right there in London.
Again, I couldn't argue with any of that, and I'm not trying to be the devil's advocate. I'm trying to be fair, because we get, because of the nature of this programme, I do get emails from people, and they expect me, I suppose, to share the opinions and the ideas of other programmes, and they're pretty surprised when they find out that I don't go along with the nonsense that we hear from Paul Joseph Watson and Tommy Robinson. I don't at all. But it's very difficult, Kevin, to explain to people living in towns where all of a sudden their local council is populated entirely by people who are second generation from Pakistan or from India. And we joked today, didn't we, you and I, about how often, you know, God love people, they're so badly educated, not stupid, just badly educated, that they don't understand the difference between somebody from Pakistan, from India, from Bangladesh. They never heard of a Sikh or you know, they tend to lump people with brown skin all into one group, which of course is silly and it's ignorant. But when people see there and right across the Midlands and the north of the country, we see this. We see councils and towns that are populated by, and this is the administration of the area, the local council, and it's pretty much dominated by people whose backgrounds are from these countries that I just spoken about. And then, you know, you factor into that then what we've seen in Sweden. And today we're hearing about Chapelle Pajol in Paris, where a lot of people are reporting young African and young Arab men, you know, behaving extremely badly, threatening women, telling women what to do. Now, I know a lot of this stuff is bullshit, Kevin. I'm not stupid. I've been around the block a lot, and I know that a lot of these hateful right-wing nutters, as they are, will make a lot of this stuff up, but not all of it. And this is why I prefaced the programme before I came on here with, you know, I want to move away from the black and the white. So you have the extreme left, the extreme right, two masks on the same face. I know this all comes from Rothschild Zionism, ultimately, and where that leads and the agenda behind this. But how do you explain that to people who see young Arab men behaving like that, who see that there is a real problem with grooming gangs for men of an Arabic background? Now, whether the religion has anything to do with it or not, we could debate that all day. I'm inclined to, you know, to kind of slightly lean towards where you're coming from. But those people
was it Arabic, Richie? I thought it was Pakistani.
Right, okay, yeah, okay, I've got to be careful about what I say and how I phrase it. Right, in Paris, excuse me, Arab men and African men, here in the northwest of England, grooming gangs, as far as I know, Afghan and Pakistani were the roots of these men. Hence, they're called Muslim grooming gangs by the likes of the Tommy Robinsons and others. But how do you explain to ordinary men and women who've seen their communities transformed and who have seen their councils become, you know, dominated by people who, for them, Islam is their religion? How do you explain to them, Kevin, that there's a deeper, darker agenda going on there? To them, you might as well be talking Greek to them, you know?
Well, it's, you know, from over here on this side of the Atlantic, the stuff you're talking about is very familiar. Because here in the United States, we've had waves and waves of immigration, you know, one group after another group. And the new group is always the underclass. For instance, my Irish ancestors were the underclass. They were not even considered white for a good portion of the 19th century after they came over here to the U.S. And the Irish gangs in New York, for example, and you can, you know, get a look at this in Martin Scorsese's film Gangs of New York, were the underclass then. And that's where you would get these, you know, pimps and prostitutes and druggies and troublemakers of various kinds. Different kinds of underworld phenomena follow immigrants. This, you know, happens probably everywhere where you have immigrants coming in to do manual labor and kind of lower class work. Here in the United States, we actually don't have that problem with Muslims. You know, one of the very few groups of upper class immigrants, high class immigrants in the United States in our history has been Muslims. The majority of Muslim immigrants here are doctors, lawyers, professors, professionals, engineers, people like that. And so we have zero problem with any of these so-called Muslim crime underclass situations here in the United States, none whatsoever. However, in Europe, you have that, and that's because the people who've come into Europe from various countries, not just Muslim countries, of course. I lived and, you know, I went to school at Paris 8 up in the north side of Paris in 1989, 1990, and I hung out mainly with immigrants. There were North Africans, there were Cameroonians and sub-Saharan Africans, and there were Greeks and Italians. And I played basketball on the basketball team there at Paris 8 with these kinds of people. And we won the championship because we had better basketball players than the native French guys. So I hung out with that crowd. And it was a little bit of a kind of a typical immigrant crowd, like I'm talking about here in the United States. When you know, Italians, that was the Italian mafia. That's where they would be, you know, pimping girls in those days. And the Irish before that. And, you know, Jews at a certain point. There's always been a Jewish presence in organized crime going back for centuries in European history. Various ethnicities that immigrate and then form some kind of underclass or ghetto kind of insular situation are the place where these phenomena happen. But it doesn't mean, Richie, that all the Italians in Chicago were part of the mafia. It doesn't mean that all the Irishmen, when my ancestors were in New York, were part of the Irish mafia and pimping kids. And it had nothing to do with Catholicism, Richie.
No, it
nothing
didn't.
To do with Catholicism or Judaism or any religion. And so these people pinning it on Islam as a religion are utterly insane, bigoted morons.
They're not. I'm going to argue with you. They're not all insane. They're not all bigoted. And they're not all morons. I'm going to read a few comments.
Well, Watson is.
Oh, Watson is. Yeah, we can agree on that. God, yeah, of course we can. Right, here's a few comments. This is from a listener who says, not a lot of young Asian girls were trafficked in Rochdale. It was white girls. And it's very high-handed of Kevin to imply that people are racist just because they can differentiate how different cultures treat women. We'll come back to that in a second, because there's quite a few comments on this. Sue tweets, "We all now hopefully know that it was indeed the Zionist plan to demonise Muslims. For goodness sake, wake up," says Sue there. Let me scroll down. There's quite a lot of these comments comes in. Darren says, "I love Kevin Barrett, but he's deluded. Kevin is ignoring the fact that the British police, the French police and the Swedish police are refusing to investigate these crimes. Why? It's because of the agenda. It's because of the multicultural divide and conquer agenda." Devlin says, "These vile crimes should be investigated purely based on evidence, nothing more and nothing less." That was Devlin. Let me scroll down. There's loads and loads of tweets. I thought there...
Well, that's a great point.
It is a great point. I wouldn't argue with it. Cartoon Drunk says, "With Asian grooming gangs, it's more cultural reasons of their home countries, nothing to do with them being Muslims. It's more cultural reasons of their home countries, now to do with them being Muslims." And Angela tweets, "Other religions don't demand women to give up the right to decide for themselves, or sentence to death who wants to leave those religions, or sentence to death those who deny God." Now, I know you're going to explode, Kevin Barrett, because you're going to say that Angela and others are not accepting that these are interpretations of Islam made by, whether it's Wahhabi, Salafis or others, that there are millions and millions and millions of men and women around the world who go to the mosque, who read the Quran, who don't interpret the text in the same way. I know you're going to jump all over that one. But I want to go back to the comment about you being high-handed to say that. I don't think you're necessarily being high-handed, but this is the problem we have, you see, with this black and white thing. You know, the alt-right says the Islamic ideology is hateful. It's anti. It's not progressive. It's anti-women. You know, it's very much in the Stone Age in terms of its attitudes towards punishing people for crimes. The reasons people get sentenced to death and the lopping off of the hands and all of this sort of stuff. And then you have the socialists, the lefties, who say, no, none of this is true whatsoever. This is all about demonising Muslims. Again, I would say, I wouldn't say the truth is somewhere in the middle, but the truth is not often discussed on programmes like this. What about you being high-handed by calling people racist because they're asking questions about these cultures and how these cultures view women and treat women? Go ahead.
Well, if people are asking questions, that's fine with me. But the problem is that people who are completely ignorant are leaping to completely wrong answers that are hateful, deluded, and they're going to lead to a lot of violence. So it's very parallel to the situation in the south of the United States in the 1910s and 20s, when hundreds of black men were lynched for the crime of lusting after white women and raping white women. And probably the majority of those people were innocent, but there was a kind of a cultural trope that believed that there was something in African American culture and or genetics or biology that led them to be a threat to white womanhood. And that same kind of mentality, it's exactly the same thing that is sweeping through the minds of these bigoted people. I don't think I'm high-handed to notice that any more than I would be high-handed to say that these, the lynch mobs of the 1920s here in the United States were evil, racist, bigoted, ignorant idiots.
I'm going to argue with that again, because aren't the native people of any area, aren't they entitled to be, I don't want to say they're entitled to hate, but they're entitled to be horrified and to want justice and want something to be done?
Of course. I mean, I'm all for hunting down the perpetrators of these crimes and taking care of them, whether locking them up or worse.
Let me finish that question, because there was a second part to that question. Because these guys, particularly in Rochdale and in Rotherham, they were targeting white girls from broken homes often girls that were really badly down on their luck, and they were grooming them. And they saw these girls as fair game for cultural reasons. So I'm not going to say to...
Bullshit.
Kevin, for cultural reasons, there's no doubting that. It ain't bullshit.
They knew what they were doing. They knew what they were doing was wrong, just as rapists here in the United States and everywhere else know that what they're doing is wrong. And culture does not give people any kind of license to commit these crimes.
Who said it gave them license? But we're talking about the psychological makeup of somebody based on their life experiences and where they've come from. And you're trying to, and I think it's untenable, by the way, and I love you, by the way, Barrett, but I think it's untenable what you're saying. You're saying that these guys' life experiences in their countries, in their villages in many cases, where women are second-class citizens, women are demoted to a secondary, sometimes a third role in the family, that didn't play a part in these guys' attitudes to the women in Rochdale and Rotherham. I think that's untenable.
Do you really know that that's the culture in their home countries, Richie? Because
I
my
can't
experience,
say it for well, a fact, you know, can
I? I'm married to a woman from Morocco who feels that her native Islamic culture treats women better than what the Western culture does, and who envied the pious, hardcore Muslims among her friends at school because they had more freedom, whereas the relatively secular girls like her were mistreated. Do you really know what it's like in Pakistan?
Well, I'll tell you
what. So many people who've actually lived in these cultures go over there thinking that women are second-class citizens, and then they discover that women actually run the place. They decide who marries whom, they tell their husbands what to do, etc., etc., etc. And I don't know if that's the case in these parts of Pakistan
because
or
it's
not.
Because
you're
it's not black
to
and white, Kevin.
Insane conclusions.
I'm not, because it's not black and white. I was lucky enough to travel in Morocco, and your lovely wife is right. Morocco is a marvelous place. We have to travel in different parts of the country, and that's what I saw. But what I see over here sometimes, and I'm not, listen, you know you're not talking to Paul Joseph Watson. I know who's behind this, ultimately, who's behind this divide and conquer, who was behind multiculturalism, who was behind the dilution of culture, the death of sovereignty. I know that. But what we see here is, and I've seen it, and I've two very good friends that I've known for years here. I can't mention them by name. But one of them is from Rochdale, and they're Pakistani guys, and I've known them a long time through football and through sport. And it's not uncommon, Kevin, for women to be beaten very badly by the patriarch of a family here because they've somehow dishonoured or slighted the family or left the family down. It isn't a rare thing within certain Pakistani communities in this country. So of course I'm not saying that across Muslim countries women are treated like this, but there are cultures within cultures, and I believe there is a link to how these guys saw these women, these white women, to their own upbringing, wherever they came from, in how they saw women being treated. And we know in Pakistan, we know about honour killings and honour beatings in certain parts of society there. And I think
it's not academic to ignore, right? Opposed by Islam, that these Christians from these countries do more honor killings than Muslims do, and the families that are less religious do more honor killings than the families that are more religious.
I know it's opposed
by
Islam.
Is the biggest factor stopping honor killings.
I know it's opposed by Islam. You'll never hear me, you know, take down or attempt to take down or insult or slag off anybody's religion. I'm an atheist. I don't believe in God, and I don't have much truck with organized religion, but I have enormous respect for everybody who does. I know that ultimately Muslims don't condone that. I know they don't. And everything we're describing goes on in white UK and white America and white France. Wives getting the shit beaten out of them by drunken husbands, of course. But we're talking about people in communities who've seen multiculturalism. They've seen their cities and their towns change completely. They saw what happened in Rochdale and Rotherham, where the police refused to investigate it, Kevin. Why is that? That's what they want to know. And of course, some of these people will generalise and make statements about Islam. But not you now, but other people labelling them as bigoted and as ignorant is missing the point.
That's a good question. Why didn't the police investigate? The idea that the police are so politically correct that they won't deal with something like this, that's bizarre. I've never heard anything like that comparable to it. That's a really good question. People have the right to ask that question. They have a right to go after the police that didn't investigate.
But because I suppose my take on it is because the agenda moves forward, doesn't it? The agenda to overwhelm the public services of countries and countries with mass immigration, the majority of whom are wonderful women, men and children from places like Syria and Libya, whose countries have been destroyed by Wahhabis, trained, armed, funded and set to commit their mayhem by our governments and the intelligence agencies of our governments perversely. And they do that knowing full well that among the millions of migrants will be, and I admit it's a very small minority, but a group of men whose cultures, whose beliefs will lead them to do things like we saw in Rotherham and in Rochdale. And that then will set the completely scared and completely unknowing and ignorant, but not racist, not hateful, not spiteful, just ignorant people in those cities not knowing what the hell is going on, Kevin. That's how I see it.
Yeah, I don't think that the distinction between these cultures is really very relevant. Like here, you know, and I'm sure it's the same in Britain. We have, you know, people like working class people, for example, and there's certain, you know, there may be more guys in a working class neighborhood or trailer park or whatever that'll talk smack about women. And then there'll be a larger minority of those guys who get into criminal behavior as opposed to some other culture like a middle class suburb or something. And it's the same thing in every group. So with immigrants, it's the same thing. There are going to be some immigrants who are basically just like the middle class suburb that are not going to know anything about this and not be involved in this criminal stuff. And then there's going to be that criminal element in any, especially in a kind of ghetto or underclass situation. There's always a criminal element. That's true among native born Brits, I'm sure. And there probably is more drunken, you know, girlfriend abuse in that demographic. I think it's just not that useful to divide people up according to their skin color, according to whether their ancestors grew up on the Indian subcontinent or in Britain.
It is in this case, though, Kevin. I think it is particularly in this country because we see the hatred, you know, online. We see it on television. We hear it on radio phone-in shows. We see the hatred. I'm living in Manchester. There's a large Asian community in Manchester, in South Manchester. Our street where we're based, there's a Pakistani family across the road. There's a Sikh family just around the corner. There are families from Bangladesh and India. I should be very careful here. When I say they're from, their origins are from those countries. Sometimes they're second and third generations. And they're good people, you know. They're just regular folks, regular neighbours. But I think you might be missing the point, Kevin, because regardless of, you'll say you won't, and I'm going to read some tweets out in a minute. I've taken a bit of stick. I'll read out the tweets, the critical ones, and I'll read them out now in a second. But I see these. I've been looking at these stories for a long time. These stories about groups of Asian men doing this and doing that and doing the other thing. And because I'm a fair-minded and reasonably intelligent man, I've never differentiated. To me, you know, people going after women, regardless of where they come from, whether they're white, black, Asian, Indian, Chinese, doesn't make a difference. If somebody's going after women and stalking women and harassing women, deal with it. Arrest them. If you've got evidence, charge them. And if it's good enough, you'll get a conviction and whatever happens after that. But I think there is evidence, from what we've seen, of two things in this part of the country, in the northwest, in Yorkshire, in Rotherham, that culturally, among some young Asian men, whether they go to the mosque or not, Kevin, I have no idea, but their attitude towards women is in the Stone Age. And they've targeted white, young white girls. Again, just to go back on what I said, I know I'm repeating myself, but who come from difficult circumstances, who are more vulnerable to being preyed upon and more vulnerable to predators. And what we've seen, and I'm not making this up, you can take this to the bank, is that the local police in these places, they've been caught, as we say in England, bang to rights. They've been caught. The evidence is overwhelming that they were reluctant to investigate what was going on and to go after these guys because of the background of these guys. Now, that might sound to you like, Well, no, I couldn't. You might say, I can't imagine that, Richie. But that is a fact. And people in these communities want to know why. Why? Why are some young Asian men predisposed to having this attitude towards women? And why are they getting away with it? And why did they get away with it so long, right?
I would question whether all of the young Asian men in that part of the country are predisposed to it.
Oh, no,
I think it's a very small proportion of them.
I didn't say all of them, Jesus. No, I didn't say. I said some, and I specifically said some. I said some. Jesus, of course. Listen, let me just read a few tweets. This is good, and it's important stuff, this. Important to do it like this as well. Atos on Twitter says, Richie, your guest Kevin is making absurd assumptions about working class people. Kevin is unknowing, and he's biased in his opinions on the British class system, says Atos. Kevin will come back on that in a second as well. I want to scroll down because I got a smack on the wrist from Sue. Let me just scroll down there. So many of them have come in. Kevin. Faisal, before we get to Sue, Faisal says there are Muslim men that use the example of Saudis and other NATO-sponsored regimes to rationalise misogynistic behaviour. I'm pretty sure Faisal is Asian, but I don't know too much about Faisal's background and his ancestry there. Mark tweets, Kevin has to wake up and realise that the sex crime increase in Sweden is linked to cultures who abuse women, says Mark. You might have put that a bit better, Mark. But I understand what you're saying. We'll come back to that as well. Let me scroll down there as well. So many of these, Kevin. I thought as much. Sue says, is it a cultural reason when Jimmy Savile was raping children? Or was it because he was white and from Leeds? So if you can't say it for a fact, don't say it, Richie, says Sue. JP in Manchester says, culture and inherent beliefs don't change the fact an individual knows right from wrong. Race and religion is an excuse, says JP. So we're taking a bit of stick there, Kev. A lot of balance on the old Twitter there. I'm not picking them selectively, by the way. I'm reading them as they come in. A lot of listeners saying, listen, there is a cultural issue with some young Asian guys, which is bad enough. But it wouldn't be an issue if the authorities in this country had gone after it, dealt with it, nipped it in the bud. Why didn't they? Is the question that's coming through loud and clear from our listeners. And I've had one from Mary, an email from Mary. And Mary said, Kevin is a bit defensive, but then I'd understand. I'd be defensive if I was him. This is not an attack on Islam and the religion of Islam, writes Mary. It's a long-winded email. I'm trying to pick out the salient bits of it. But Mary says, rather an attack on some interpretations of Islam. And that interpretation of Islam, that misogynistic interpretation, seems to be on the rise amongst young Asian men. Where is it coming from? Why are some Asian men going down that road? And why is everybody missing the point, writes Mary? Why is the right missing the point? Why is the left missing the point, she says. And it's a longer email than that. Kev, go ahead. Over to you.
Well, you know, the big mystery here is this allegation that the police essentially totally ignored this. And that really is a good question. So I apologize if I sounded like I was attacking the people who were asking that question. But it seems to me, you know, one possible answer here that leaps to mind is that it sounds like, from what I've heard, the victims tended to be people from the working class. And guess what? The police do. I don't know if Britain is like the U.S. They don't care about poor people. They don't care about working people. And, you know, there's the famous Public Enemy song, 911 is a joke. And you could apply that to 9/11, of course, too. But what it was originally about was calling the emergency number 911. If you do that from an African-American urban neighborhood here in the United States, they'll never show up. They don't care. And then there are statistics here in the United States showing that the chances of getting prosecuted and sentenced for a crime go down, almost to zero as the status, the social status, the income level, and the race. You know, the race is considered lower on the racial totem pole or hierarchy here in the United States. You can abuse them and criminally attack them, and the police don't do as much about it. So I'm thinking that maybe part of the problem here is that the police are seeing crimes against young girls who are coming from broken homes and bad backgrounds, and they're just not paying enough attention to those crimes because they don't pay enough attention to all the crimes that happen to people in that demographic.
You don't think, Kevin, that there's any element of this within which the police are being pressured from above not to expose it or highlight it, even if it is a tiny minority. And I'm sure it is a tiny minority. Again, I'm in Manchester city centre, and I was at a concert on Friday. I was surrounded by people from every background having a bit of a, having the crack, as we say back home. Not literally having crack, of course, if you're listening in America, but having the C-R-A-I-C. Look, even if it is a minority amongst some members of the Asian community, you're saying that you can't consider for a minute that there is pressure on the authorities from above not to expose it, not to get into it, because it will highlight or expose or start a discussion about multiculturalism and how that's failed.
That sounds unlikely to me, honestly, for a couple of reasons. First, just coppers in the UK, if they're like coppers in the US, I haven't been to the UK for so long, and I've never been to these areas. So honestly, it's hard for me to really try to project myself into the mindset of these police. But it just strikes me as really strange that these kind of ordinary police would allow themselves, somebody says to them, hey, we're trying to promote multiculturalism, so don't investigate these rapes. Don't investigate these, these child abuse cases. But if that's the case, the cops there are different from cops I know here. I mean, cops are bad enough and corrupt enough here in the United States, but nothing like that would even be possible. And so I think this is probably a fantasy in the minds of people who are upset for some good reasons and some bad reasons about immigration.
But over years, a social worker called Sarah Rowbotham, who's been the feature of a BBC drama, I spoke briefly with her on the phone the other day, over years was telling the police, she was an outreach worker in Rochdale Town and was meeting so many of these girls that had been abused in this way, and they didn't want to know, Kevin. I mean, it's an absolute fact, and not just in Rochdale, but in Rotherham and elsewhere as well. And the journalist in you and in me has to say that something is up there, that hiding behind a PC agenda, because I think it's far more sinister than a PC agenda, but using political correctness as a front, somebody along the line has said, don't talk about this. Let's not talk about it. You know, in the same way that the establishment is trying to cover up VIP paedophilia, nobody talks about it. The national media in this country is still trying to tell us it's all a hoax. The newspapers won't talk about it, even though all the evidence is there. To me, the evidence is overwhelming that people like Sarah Rowbotham handed to the police on a platter all the evidence they needed that Asian men were grooming and were sexually abusing girls over years in that town, and they didn't want to touch it.
A link between the VIP paedophilia cover-up and this cover-up. Here in the United States, the Franklin scandal is the best known of the paedophilia scandals, and it was clear that the VIP perpetrators, we're talking about all the way up to the Bush White House, was involved in this. You know, the call boys and call girls were taking midnight tours of the Bush White House. That was a big front page headline in the Washington newspaper. And these kids were being recruited from very, broken home backgrounds, from the Boys Town in Nebraska.
Yeah.
So they're both very, very wealthy and powerful people on the one hand, and then people at the very lowest level of society on the other hand, who are actually part of the same criminal machine. And I wonder if that could be the case in the UK as well.
I couldn't deny it. I couldn't deny it, as a possibility. I'd be an idiot. I don't know, Kevin. My gut tells me, not because I want to be right, I've never been like that. My gut tells me that what was going on in Rotherham and in Rochdale and other places might not be connected to the VIP paedophile ring. But then again, I don't know. I've got a load of tweets and emails coming in. Seb tweets this, Richie, mullahs. The mullahs are funded by the Saudis, who preach elements of Wahhabism and poison the minds of otherwise decent lads. I've come across it. Of course, since the Wahhabi agenda was invented by the British Secret Services, over time, it's come full circle, and it suits the authorities to feed the conflict. And then there is cultural vendetta, and just downright ignorance too. Say hi to Kevin for me, Seb. Seb is coming from kind of where I'm coming from. These people exist, Kevin. And they're being, when I say these people, this interpretation of Islam exists, this cultural tendency towards women as second-class citizen exists and has been exploited by those who want to pit Muslims and, I don't know what you'd call them, white, indigenous, British people against one another. Because while we're killing one another, we're not fighting the real enemy, are we? That's where I come from. I'm sure you want to come in on that.
Yeah, I don't know if even most of the so-called, Salafi, Wahhabi side of Islam, and I think there's a lot of stuff I really don't like in that. It's an obscurantist, boneheaded interpretation that's led to all sorts of problems. But I don't think most people, even with that interpretation of Islam, are justifying going out and criminally grooming kids for pedophile prostitution rings. I mean, that's definitely not going to be looked at well by any variety of Islam, even the most backwards and boneheaded ones that I know about. Now, there is a tendency, of course, for people to justify whatever they do by religion one way or another. So it's always possible that some, or to also plead that, oh, I'm a victim of my background. My culture made me do it. Gee, Officer Krupke, I did all these terrible things because of my background. And so there's all of these factors. But honestly, Richie, I don't think that the Wahhabi version of Islam, with all of the, evil, nastiness and corruption and hatred, which is almost all against Muslims, by the way. Wahhabism is basically an anti-Islam movement. It's part of the war on Islam. It was weaponized by the British Empire.
Yes.
It's been maintained by the American Empire. It's almost completely aimed against all other forms of Islam, meaning 99%+ forms of Islam. That's what Wahhabism is. And it is pretty messed up. But I've never heard of it having any kind of justification for these kinds of crimes. So I think trying to pin this on religion and this alleged problem with Islam and women, I think this is nonsense. That's number one. There is no such problem.
Well,
hang
on a second. Let me jump in, Kev. Let me jump in. What about, we're lucky enough, we have listeners all over the place. Now, I won't hear from them today, but I'll hear from them tomorrow. There will be people in Germany and in France and in Sweden, and they will say, Kevin, I've been reading you and listening to you for years, and Fetzer and Richie Allen and David Icke, and I don't have an Islamophobic or a racist bone in my body, they'll say. And then comes but, and we always laugh at that, with the inevitable but. They will say, since the influx of migrants, since Merkel took 1 million migrants into the country, since we've seen migrants in Greece and in France and in other parts of Europe, these crimes against women have increased. If slightly, they've increased. How can you explain that away? That's what they will say.
Well, of course. And I will say, who are these migrants? And we'll look at them and we'll see lots of them are from sub-Saharan Africa, from Christian backgrounds. We'll see that many of them from Syria and other Middle Eastern countries are also from Christian backgrounds. And we'll see that there's no correlation whatsoever between the various crime problems coming out of the immigrant ghettos and underclass ghettos and the religions involved. That is, there are going to be just as many problems coming from Christians from sub-Saharan Africa or from Syria, for that matter, as there are from Muslims from sub-Saharan Africa or from Syria. This has nothing whatsoever to do with religion.
I'm going to say this, and I'm going to give you the final word, and I'm a man of my word, so you will get the final word. This is how I see it. Of course, Islam is not a religion of hatred and murder. Of course it isn't. Fundamentally, the religions that came from Abraham, Judaism, Christianity and Islam, ultimately the teachings are about tolerance and about love and about acceptance and understanding of where we are. Whether I agree with them or not, I really believe that. I know that to be true. But I'm going to tell you this, Kev. I think, and again, I'm lucky enough to know some Pakistani guys, and I will persuade one of them to come on the programme, because I know some of my listeners who listen in spite of the fact they can't fucking stand me, who listen anyway. They'll think I'm making it up. But I'll bring some people on this program whom I know for many years, and they will say that amongst some, and it's small, but it exists in some areas of the Pakistani community in this country, women are treated like second-class citizens. They are. I talked earlier on about women, getting knocked about, getting beaten up, in some cases getting attacked, disfigured and killed because of dishonouring the family. And I think out of that, Kevin, has come some young men. Some of my listeners are giving me abuse. They say, oh, you know, you could be putting young men in harm tonight in England. No way am I putting anybody in harm. We're talking about some we're talking about. The likes of these guys who went around attacking these women in Rochdale. Out of that upbringing, Kevin, has come some of these guys, some of these young kids. And that's what we're seeing. On a small scale, maybe not so small a scale, maybe not a massive scale, but on a scale of sorts. And alongside that, we've seen a, not even a reluctance, but an unwillingness by the authorities in this country to do anything about it because of another agenda. That's how I see it. I like to think, I am going to shut up and you'll get the final word. You can have 2 or 3 or 4 minutes if you want. I'm going to shut up. I like to think you know damn well that for me, this is not about going after Islam. This is about taking on an issue. People who listen to this programme, people whom I live around and live with, are talking about this. It's been national news for the last couple of weeks. It has to be spoken about. You know where I'm coming from on it. That's how I feel about it. These, you know, tendencies towards women being demoted to second class by some aspects of the Pakistani community in this country. Out of that comes these gangs. That serves an agenda, I believe, and I'm going to shut up. You have the final word, Kev. Go ahead.
Well, I wouldn't mind seeing an investigation in if there's any evidence that police were ordered off any of these cases by higher-ups for any reason whatsoever. That should be investigated, and the police and the people who ordered them off the investigation should be prosecuted. So that's, I think, maybe the positive, practical thing that we could all agree on and that should happen. But as far as all of this linking it to religion, I think that's a huge red herring. And indeed, that just actually feeds the fire that was started on 9/11 when people who mainly hate Islam, but also hate all religions. We're talking about radical Freemasons. We're talking about the Illuminati Freemasons coming out of Sabbatean, satanic, heretical Judaism. Those people blew up the Twin Towers, murdered 3,000 people in order to start a permanent Western war against the religion of Islam and to brainwash people to hate Islam and to immediately think of Islam whenever negative things like this come up that have some kind of remotely tangential relationship to Islam. And so I think that deep inside the minds, I don't know about you, Richie, but of most of the people who are thinking about this issue and even having the first thought of Islam being even related to it are doing that because they've been brainwashed and they've been taught that Islam is this other, it's different, somehow it's foreign, and it's the source of whatever problems that we can imagine are related to it. So that's my take on this. I would say look at this as a problem, a social problem, a problem of an immigrant underclass that is, like all underclasses, has a toxic culture in some respects that's given to crime and criminal gangs and cartels and mafias, as all underclasses everywhere have always had, all of the immigrants in the United States as well. And we're a country of immigrants. So think of it in those terms, reframe it in terms of reality and stop going off on these poisonous fantasies, imagining terrible, terrible things about this evil religion of Islam that you were scared about when they implanted this Islamophobia deep in your subconscious mind on 9/11 with their mass mind control operation. So that's my request. And again, the practical thing to do is to push for a real investigation to see if these cops were actually ordered off the case.
And that was the final word. I'm a man of my word. Go to truthjihad.com, folks, to find out all about Kevin, if you don't know already. His books are terrific. He's got a terrific take on these events, completely unique and completely independent of anybody else. Kev, always a pleasure. We'll do this again real soon about something different, of course. Thanks for your time, mate. Love you coming on the programme.
Thanks, Richie. It's always great to talk with you.
The terrific Kevin Barrett, live from Madison, Wisconsin, on the line to us there. Really thought-provoking stuff, that. As I said, to find out more about Kevin, go to truthjihad.com. Got through most of your comments. If I didn't, I'll pick up one or two more now, and we're not too far away from the end of the programme. Anyway, so let me just read a couple of comments. I've said my final piece on it. Mark tweets, and certain faiths allow child marriages. Kevin is failing to recognise the damage that religions have done against men, women and children. I'll tell you what, Mark, the legal age of consent in Spain is still 13. Think about that. Oh yeah, and I lived in Spain for a number of years. Thanks for that, Mark. Sue tweets, have we all forgotten this is the Zionist plan? Won't somebody please think of the children, screams Sue. Sue, Jesus Christ, I'm saying it every night of the week. Of course, if there is a tiny minority amongst the migrant inflow to a country that feel like this and see women like that and commit crimes, it is part of the agenda. Of course it is. This isn't Muslim bashing. I wouldn't tolerate it. I wouldn't allow it on this programme. It's so small-minded and it's so not seeing the big picture. But the lefties are wrong. The idiots like Alex Jones and Paul Joseph Watson are wrong. Somewhere in the middle, there's an agenda. That's what we're talking about here. No Muslim bashing at all. Faisal came back to say the media and the authorities have stirred it up there. Islamic or any Asian African people were previously very subdued and wary, says Faisal. Mark tweets, Richie, anyone who rapes a child belongs to no faith. That's a good point, Mark. Well, ultimately, you don't have any real belief in any benevolent God or any loving God if you rape a child. And, you know, I've done hours of shows on the Catholic Church. Don't get me started. And the rape and the murder and the torture of children by the Catholics. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm not going to read out any more comments there. That was interesting. That's what we're here to do, is talk about things that nobody else is talking about, but do it properly. Really enjoyed listening to Kevin. And Stephen Lendman in the forest there is a top man. Terrific guest as well. That's it for the programme. I will be back with you live again tomorrow, Tuesday, at 7 p.m. British Summer Time. In the meantime, stay in touch with davidicke.com. Bookmark davidicke.com/headlines. Fab Radio 2, of course. richieallen.co.uk. And I'll see you tomorrow. I'm going to play a song that I did finish with only a week ago. I'm not lazy, but so wrapped up in what Kevin was saying, I forgot to load a record. So I'm going to go out with Aslan. And this is, I don't think you'll mind, it's a brilliant song anyway. Happy birthday to Linda Atherton, David's ex-wife. David's ex-wife, his great friend. Linda's birthday today. Happy birthday, Linda. Hope you've had a great day with Jamie and Kerry and Gareth and everybody. Bye now.